It's time for Dig Deep on KEXE KBXE. It's where we take up a topic and we pose it to our posers. No, I'm sorry. I heard the word poser.
You're not wrong.
to our commentators. That's our liberal commentator is Aaron Brown, and our conservatives is Chuck Marone. You know Chuck from Strong Towns. You know Aaron from Minnesota Brown and the Great Northern Radio Show. Good to be back with you guys in the studio. I'm Heidi Hilton.
Hi, very nice. Yeah, nice. I think poser and pundit both have like the same Latin roots. You know, like I'm sure if you go back in the ancient Greek, they probably are derived from the same thing, right?
It's a great thing to say, and it might be true. And that's what makes us pundits.
Exactly. It just has to sound good. It doesn't have to be grounded in any reality. Yeah.
So we've been doing this for a while. We take up lots of different topics, and we are always open to topics from you. If you want to send us an idea of what you think we should be talking about, you can send it to comments at kexe.org. This time, Aaron, you had an idea based on what you do in your classroom at Hibbing Community College. Kind of lay it out for us.
Yeah.
How did the students take it, and then let's us take it on.
Absolutely. Well, it might be hard to believe, but I don't make my living as a Northern Minnesota political blogger. I am a teacher of public speaking and communication at Hibbing Community College. And every semester in five classes that I teach over and over and over again, the same class, I have to teach a section on persuasion. And there's a lot of ways to teach persuasion, but I choose, instead of picking the issue of the day and letting students argue about, you know, the what you'd see on social media or that kind of thing, I have them instead do research on what they perceive to be a community problem. Like something in their world, like right in their midst, that they see as a community problem. And then in small groups, I have them form, you know, an idea that would, they think, solve that community problem and then lead to a call to action. In other words, here's something we can all do about this problem. And that's the mission of the speech, is to solve a community problem with action of some kind. I always find the assignment interesting because students typically aren't politically connected. They're typically not reading the same websites and following the same blogs as I do. I doubt very much that they are dig deep listeners.
They're not planning to run for governor.
Yeah,
they're
not running for office. They don't particularly. In fact, I've done some demographic research with that part of my coursework, and typically they don't even, like, most students at my college don't have a political identity. Like, of any kind. If I say, are you a liberal or a conservative, they'll ask what those words mean.
Sure.
And it doesn't mean they don't have attitudes and things that would maybe push them one way or the other. But point being, you know, they're not coming at this the way the grizzled veterans of the blogosphere might come at this assignment. They come at it very much, oh, what is a problem? And that's where I thought it would be interesting to talk about what I see the most often from these students, mostly based in Hibbing, but the problems I think that they talk about would apply to most of our small towns in northern Minnesota. The number one problem that I see, I guess it's hard to say which one's number one, but there are two that stand out. One is, there's nothing in this town to do. And sometimes that gets broadened out to, I'm new to town and I don't know, you know, where to go or what I should be doing to enjoy life here. Sometimes it's particularly from the students who are from here. Oh man, the mall stinks. Oh man, we need more restaurants and cool things to go to and more activities. And then the other one, and sometimes this topic is related to the first one, is drugs, specifically drug abuse, maybe alcohol abuse, addiction, and the crime and things that result from that problem. Those two are the, I'd say 75% of all groups end up coming up with something related to one of those two problems, which I thought was really interesting. And then we talked about there were other problems. Quite often they relate to aesthetics, like, you know, garbage in the streets, or a couple times they'll find something very specific, like people aren't getting enough sleep, and so they're cranky, and so what can we do about that? And you see some things like that. But it's really telling to me that this, you know, kind of cross-section group of our community, particularly lower-income part of our community, sees those two things as the biggest problems. And I thought I'd pose it to our little group here for discussion.
Let me give a related anecdote, because I see this a lot in my work too. As a planner, we often go out and engage the community. There's whole classes in community engagement, and there's professionals who do this. Community engagement generally means holding a meeting and inviting people to come and state their comments and put them up on a wall and give them stickers to vote. If you're really, really progressive, if you're really trying to reach out to the masses, you may hold your meeting at some place not convenient for you, the convener, right? So instead of at City Hall or at some official venue, you would go to the Senior Citizens Center and hold it there. Or you would go to, if you're really crazy, you'd go to a place where youth gather. Like maybe you go to the high school and have it. And the idea is that, you know, you're trying to lower the bar to entry to this conversation. The very fascinating thing to me about this, as someone who's been through this many times and seen it, is how when you ask people these kind of open-ended questions, you get, particularly when it's, you know, come to my meeting, you get what I think is, I heard someone call this once, the front row versus the back row people. You get the front row answers. Boy, there's nothing to do here. It would be really great if we had a community center. Boy, there's nothing to do in this city. It'd be really great if we had a children's museum, which is one of the things been floated in Brainerd recently. Boy, drugs are a problem. It'd be really great if we had a, you know, this kind of facility. In other words, the people who come to these conversations come with an idea in mind of what should transpire, as opposed to like the problem being a multifaceted, like multi-vector causation kind of problem. When you actually sit down and listen to people, or when you talk to them one-on-one, or even better yet, when you follow them around in their lives and can get kind of a narrative, I see these same things that Aaron is bringing up all the time. We've had this sense of isolation that is particularly acute in youth who are at this point in life where biologically you're looking for someone to kind of swap DNA with, in a sense, but even more primitive than that, they're just at this social part of their life where they're figuring out who they are, what they're about. There's this desperate sense of isolation. And then you overlay on top of that, particularly when you get to poorer families, but not necessarily always the case, this drug and alcohol abuse thing that really messes with people's lives. It distorts your view of the world, where you have a hard time kind of understanding in this very formative point in your life, what is real, what is not real. I think sometimes as front row people, we can dismiss this. We can write it off to a cultural narrative that we can put in place. I think we do a disservice to it. Digging deeper into it, in a sense, and giving it its just due, I think is a really important thing for all cities and all communities of people in rural America to do, because these are, in a sense, like universal struggles that you don't see in urban areas the way we see them here.
That's Chuck Marone. You're listening to Dig Deep on KAXE, KBXE. They're taking up this idea that stemmed from a conversation in Aaron Brown's classrooms at Hibbing Community College. This idea of what are the social problems out there? What can we do to change it? And time again, Aaron Brown has been seeing that his students say there's nothing to do in small towns. Is it true? How could we solve it? Aaron continues the conversation.
What these students want is what Chuck described, a connection. They want connection with, yeah, maybe a connection with a potential mate, but connection with each other, with friends, with a community of people who want to do some of the things they find interesting. And that's the part where I can think we can start to see the relationship between seemingly different ideas, like a kid has nothing to do on a Friday night, and a kid in this area has a higher chance of becoming addicted to a drug or alcohol, because both of those things, I think, have a lot to do with connection, whether or not you feel connected to a social group. A lot of the most recent research on addiction relates to that lack of connection being one of the reasons that drugs, A, become appealing in the first place, but why you end up addicted to them in the long run is because of a perceived lack of connection with others, a reason not to use the drugs. is what is lacking.
I think in the time we've got left in the segment, I think maybe it would be good to talk about some of the things that in regards to this, that small towns theoretically do well, mm-hmm. because I think they're not today. And maybe we can talk about why they're not in the next segment. But mm-hmm. I feel like, you know, if you look at small towns, go back to the Andy Griffith Show as mm-hmm. kind of the idealized small town. What do they do really well? Well, you've got a sense of belonging to a community. You know your neighbors know you. You have a sense of safety and security. You have things where you're getting together regularly for social reasons. You go to church together. You have a church social afterwards. You have events at the school. You all show up and watch the kids play. Even if you don't have a kid in school, you still go to the community play. Of course you would. Why wouldn't you do that? There are all these things that are that kind of, I think, theoretically or in a historic sense, maybe if we want to nostalgize this to a degree, were the benefits of small towns that in a sense were different than the benefits of living in a big city. If you go to a big city, you can be somewhat anonymous. So in a sense, disconnected while also being connected. If you look at like modern day, I can go to a baseball game or a football game. I can go to a concert. There's all kinds of theater and comedians and stuff going on. There's all these social spaces all over the place to me. There's tons of people. If I meet a group that I like, but maybe not too much, I can find a different group the next time. There's a lot less individual judgment in a big city, a lot more anonymity. When you move to a small town, because of those social connections being so strong, they also bring with them a certain level of judgment. You know, we got a color inside the lines. Well,
the notion of conformity.
Conformity becomes important.
A much bigger deal.
Conformity is highly correlated with interdependence. Mm-hmm. So when you don't depend on someone, you don't really impose any values on them. Mm-hmm. To conform. But when you have this kind of codependence, now all of a sudden you have expectations that creep in with that.
There was a really interesting, but this is a sideline here a little bit, but when Greenway hockey went to state here, there was a press conference given by a Greenway alumni who was a coach for the Air Force Academy, I believe. And he was talking about growing up in Coleraine-Beauvais, talking about mullets and how hockey players had mullets, and nobody cared. If you wanted to wear crazy big hockey hair in your town, you could have any kind of hair you want. Because, and he made this quote, I'll paraphrase it a little bit, but he said something like, on the Iron Range, you can be anything you want to be. And then he paused and he goes, as long as it's what everybody else thinks is okay.
Right. Right.
You know, which is so true. You know, you can have all kinds of characters and people who like different things, but there is a sense of like, okay, but at the end of the day, we're all this, you know.
Right.
And I grew up not in that particular area, but in the same culture, and certainly I found that to be true. You know, I can be a blogger and a person who does radio variety shows, and I can do that because, you know, I know the people my grandpa knew, and I pay attention to history, and I know the stories of things. And so they're, you know, they'll cut me some slack on this crazy, you know, talking animal sketches and stuff. They'll let all that fly because I'm okay on these other things.
Right, right.
And I think that's what a newcomer really struggles with, because they don't have anything like that to fall back on.
There's a certain disposition of human being who is a conformist, and there's a certain disposition of people who are not conformists, mm-hmm. or who just by their general nature are outside of the lines in a sense. And I think that there is a natural, and I think throughout all of human history, there's been a natural kind of reaping of people. When you reach a certain age, like some stay and join, you know, the group, and some, you know, I've reached a point where now I need to find my fortune somewhere more attuned to me or who I am. And I think that's been a natural part of living in a small town. I feel like that dimension has changed as well. And it gets to this, there's nothing to do here kind of sense, which I read as more of a feeling of isolation. As opposed to, like, in Brainerd, we've responded to youth, though there's nothing to do here. Well, let's build you a skate park. Well, that doesn't really solve the underlying problem. It might be like a physical thing to do. And if you take that lament very literally, a skate park might be the answer. But if you get deeper into that lament, there's nothing to do, which in reality is like a ridiculous thing to say. I was never bored as a kid. I always had like a gazillion things to do because I was a front row person, very connected to this, you know, broader set of kind of cultural infrastructure. I think when we get into the back row and we look at it from that vantage point, what you're hearing is a lament of isolation. And there's a lot of reasons for that that are structural, that change what we think of as nostalgic small town, Andy Griffith, know your neighbor, into something very different. And I think kind of toxic in a way today.